For presentation of the framework as we believe it stands now, a recap on the population exercise, and then a few perspectives offered by a few individuals, somewhat representative, but not, you know, authoritatively necessarily representative, coming from different perspectives. And that is all kind of for the record, both for ourselves and for any other members of the public who may be listening. I have a momentary pause here.
Can you re-edit your last edit? Do a few backs?
What happened?
Yeah, I was editing the diagram thing.
Oh, see, you weren't supposed to be doing that.
No. Yeah, I thought you stopped. Can you do another?
Go back again save
back,
again?
Yeah, go back again, refresh, and then redo your last edit, please. Sorry.
Okay, so while he's recapturing that, that's basically the essence of what we're trying to achieve this afternoon, as I say, both for our own purposes and for the purposes of anyone else who hadn't participated with us during the last 2 days. So with that, once I've put Olivia back on the hot seat, are you at a stage now? I would like to go ahead and invite Olivier to start us off by formally sort of presenting the communique. Frank is going to do it. Okay, Frank Olkin from NSF is going to do this. So, Frank. Interpret it. Walk us through it, I think, is the best way to do it. So you have the microphone.
Okay. The communique begins with an introduction, which tries to place the details of this in the context of the in context. Okay, so the summit was co-organized by NIST and the Ontolog Forum. It was co-sponsored by some 50 institutions, and it was an attempt to bring together the various communities. That is the computer scientists, the formal ontologists, philosophers of knowledge, librarians and others who work on classification systems, terminologists, etc., to discuss this sort of sprawling area called ontologies, and folksonomists. There's been considerable debate over the last few years as to what is an ontology, and various different parts of the community have been engaged in detailed debates over this. And so the point of this meeting here today was to try to call a truce to this to some extent, and rather than focus on who is or is not an ontology, we wanted to focus on what are the different dimensions which characterize ontologies or ontology-like things, and so that we can place these different artifacts, controlled vocabularies, folksonomies, axiomatized ontologies, all these sorts of things, to place these in context relative to one another and to try to differentiate the different dimensions of what characterizes these and how these different dimensions are related to the different intended uses of these activities. So this is the beginning here. And then the core of the communique is concerned with the dimensions that we've used to what we call the framework here, which are the different dimensions that characterize ontologies. And in particular, the first of these is expressiveness. which is technically not a property of the ontology. It's a property of the knowledge representation language used to, or knowledge representation methodology used to encode an ontology. And expressiveness is, you know, what kinds of things are you allowed to say? What kind of relationships are you allowed to describe? Are there inheritance mechanisms, other sorts of things? What sort of reasoning are you potentially able to do with this knowledge, particular knowledge representation methodology? And then there's a related issue, which is structure, which is a property of the ontology, not the knowledge representation language. Let's just call it a language. So that you could envision a very simple structure. You might just have a set of concepts and their definitions, but you might encode that using, let us say, first order logic into a set of axioms. They wouldn't necessarily be very interesting axioms, but the point here is that the structure of an ontology can certainly be no more expressive than the knowledge representation language it's encoded in, or formal or methodology. It might be a graph or something like this, but it could be less, and it is often less for various reasons. To facilitate exchangeability and other sorts of things, we may adopt a more expressive knowledge representation language than we actually intend to use for a particular ontology. And so structure includes such things in terms of logic. The question is, are we using propositional logic? Are we using a description logic? Are we using first-order logic? Are we using a sorted first-order logic and other sorts of things like this? And or it could refer, and historically it's often been used in classification schemes, to the graph theoretic structure of a ontology. Is it just a set of concepts and their definitions, or is it perhaps a tree, as are many taxonomies, with directed edges, like a where you might have subsumption relations or part of relations, or perhaps it's a multifaceted taxonomy in which instead of having a tree, you'll have a directed acyclic graph, or more generally something like UMLS, where you may have an arbitrary directed graph as you add more and heterogeneous kinds of relationships. The next dimension is granularity, and this is basically a question of what is the level of detail at which an ontology is specified. So you might use such measures as how many concepts or nodes are in the ontology, how many edges or relationship instances are in the ontology, or you might use measures such as what's the number of axioms per concept or something, or so all of which are measures of the level of detail at which you describe these things. So typically, upper ontologies will be described at coarser levels of detail. And at the other extreme, so these are often used for or library classification systems, whereas at the other extreme, you might have something like SNOMED, which has hundreds of thousands of concepts, which is used for encoding medical diagnoses. Intended use is another dimension. It is intended to record the original purposes of the ontology. So the purpose might include semantically informed search. It might include data semantics specification for databases or data entry. It might have been created to facilitate data integration across multiple data sources, as I said, SNOMED was for a controlled vocabulary for recording medical diagnoses. So one of the points that we're trying to get across is that different purposes for ontologies lead to different design methodologies and knowledge representation methodologies. And different degrees of formalism, typically. Automated reasoning is another dimension in which can be used to characterize an ontology. And this is, records the extent to which you anticipate using some sort of automated reasoner or inference engine. And typically these are used, they may be, automated reasoning may be used in an ontology for no other purpose than to just check for consistency, to ask whether it's even possible to satisfy the definition of a concept. Or it may be used for some sort of question answering capability. And typically, if you're going to do some sort of automated reasoning, it is usually the case that you will resort to some sort of logic encoding for the ontology. So perhaps descriptive logic if all you want to do is subsumption, or first order logic if you have more complex things. The next dimension is prescriptive versus descriptive characterization of the ontology. So descriptive ontologies are those which are simply intended to record the contemporary semantic usage in a community. So folksonomies might fall into this category, for example. And there's no necessary evaluation of the scientific correctness of this ontology. So for example, a descriptive ontology might assert that a whale is a large fish, whereas a prescriptive ontology either would it be used in a legal or regulatory setting, or in a scientific setting, you might say, well, we've got people who've done phylogenies for a long time, and we understand that whales are not fishes, they're mammals. And a great many ontologies that are situated in legal settings, regulatory settings, accounting ontologies, engineering or mathematical, actually take the form of prescriptive ontologies. The additional findings fall into a couple of categories here. One of them is governance. And this is intended to characterize how decisions are made as to what the content and structure of the original ontology was, and how we make decisions about maintaining this. And governance can range from essentially complete anarchy in folksonomies to elaborate provisions for updating and revising these ontologies, which you see in big medical terminologies such as SNOMED and other sorts of more rigorous ontologies, or it actually has to do more with the use of the ontology. But one of the points that we had fairly substantial agreement on is that if the ontology is intended for use in a legal or regulatory or professional environment, there will typically be existing institutions which are engaged in creating concepts and specifying their definitions. These may be legislative institutions, they may be regulatory bodies, they may be professional bodies such as medical profession or the accounting profession, they may be standards committees, other sorts of things. In any case, there's an existing institutional infrastructure, and we suggest here that in these contexts where people are doing these more specialized ontologies, that the ontology developers will typically need to defer to the institutional actors, at least on the English language versions, or English, natural language versions of the definitions, and that they should see their role not as creating a new set of definitions de novo, which we think is politically unrealistic, but rather as attempting to systematize, organize, and perhaps formalize in, say, some sort of logic representation, existing natural language concept definitions. The other issue that we addressed is the issue of folksonomies and formal ontologies. And here we have two radically different approaches to the construction of these ontology-like artifacts. In the case of the folksonomy, it's sort of every person for themselves. You use whatever tags you choose to, and increasingly ontologies record the some sort of representation of the identity of the person who's using the tags, so that you can have sort of person-specific tagging practices, or effectively person-specific ontologies, and formal ontologies, which are carefully crafted and encoded typically in logic and things like this. We suggest here that folksonomies should be viewed as corpora for persons who are constructing more structured kinds of ontologies, be they taxonomies or axiomatized ontologies, and that we see these in the same way we see large text corpora as objects of study from which we may be able to infer more formal ontologies, and as corpora that can be used to validate our efforts to build more strong more formal ontologies. We also foresee the possibility that more formal methods of developing ontologies, be they taxonomies or axiomatized ontologies, could be used to inform social tagging, either by providing more, let's say, elegant tag sets, or by the use of faceted tagging, where instead of having simply undifferentiated tags, we may divide the tag space into facets. The other issue that we came to agreement on was that there was a consensus that ontologies should be viewed as designed artifacts, typically designed for some intended purpose, either to organize a body of knowledge, to facilitate search, or perhaps to be used by an inference engine for some sort of semantic computations. Depending on the and the design methodologies may range, as we said, in for essentially no design in the case of folksonomies, perhaps, to very elaborate design methodologies in, for example, large structured medical terminologies. But key to this was we view these ontologies as designed artifacts, not as sort of natural things which we trip over or something like this. So the implication of this is that we're taking a step back from the notion that there's a single correct ontology to envisioning that ontologies serve different purposes, and toward that end, there may be different kinds of ontologies with different degrees of formalism, or they may have different content. And finally, there was a survey, or almost finally, in order to test this framework for characterizing ontologies, we conducted an interactive, the ontology summit organizers conducted a survey of anyone who cared to submit, but people who were involved in preparing for the summit, of people who were engaged in the development of ontologies or their use, and asked a variety of questions in which we essentially tried to populate this framework. That is, we said, well, tell us about the ontologies that you're working with, and tell us how they can be described with respect to these dimensions that we've just proposed characterizing ontologies. And we had 50 respondents from 42 different communities. The communities involved formal ontology, application development, standards ontologies. We had some people doing upper ontologies, other people doing more specialized ontologies, biomedical ontologies, folksonomies, general ontologies such as WordNet and OpenPsych. WordNet is sometimes seen as a linguistic ontology. And some very specific ontologies such as the process specification language, and a variety of different formalisms ranging from entity relationship models to OWL, and various ISO standards, ISO 11179, for example. So there are links here to the survey, which is part of the proceedings to the workshop. And I'll just conclude here by saying that the point of this workshop was to attempt to identify important dimensions by which ontologies could be characterized. We proposed a framework. We have a diagram that you can look at that relates these things. And we applied this framework by trying to look at a number of major ontologies and seeing how they fit. We recognize that the framework is still fairly preliminary, and we invite professionals from various disciplines, either subject area disciplines or different kinds of ontologies or librarians or other folks, to contribute to this by joining the Ontolog Forum and by contributing the characterization of their favorite ontology to our survey.
Thank you, Frank. I think that was a very comprehensive coverage of what we had. Two quick things then. One is we are going to move on to a little bit more detailed presentation then of the framework that's made reference to in the communique by, I guess, Leo Oberst is going to do that. Oh, no. Well, one of either Leo Oberst or Michael Gröninger are going to do that. And then we're going to touch on to the exercise of populating that framework, which Tom Gruber is going to cover for us, before we take a brief break and have some then perspectives on what we've achieved here in these last 2 days. While that's going on, we have started a little sign-up sheet here for anyone who'd like to be a small part of history. If they would like to essentially endorse the communique as an individual, not expecting people to be speaking on behalf of host institutions, if you feel comfortable doing that, we would invite you to go ahead and put your name on this and email address, for which we can also use this for a practical purpose of ongoing communications should we come up with future iterations of such a communique. So I'll start passing this around. And at the same time, then invite Leo or Michael to take us through the framework presentation.
Thank you, Steve. This is Michael. Peter, could you bring the slides up, please? Oh. Although Frank did such a great job of summarizing the framework, I'm just going to say I agree. So the framework presentation, I guess, that we'll be giving now is a little bit of an update from the one that we presented at the beginning of the meeting yesterday, which incorporated many of the ideas from Tom Gruber, Deb McGinnis, Leo Oberst, and myself. This was intended as a straw man proposal, and it proved to be a very good target, which was good. Because the purpose of this meeting was to generate discussion and get feedback and many different kinds of perspectives. And to a great extent, I mean, because it was a straw man proposal, you know, there were a lot of ideas that weren't fully articulated, and we struggled with that during the meeting. And hopefully, as reflected in the communique that Frank gave an overview of, presented just now, hopefully we cleared up some of the incomplete aspects of it, but there's still a lot of work that can be done in terms of really elaborating the various kinds of dimensions in the framework. And I think the other kind of aspect is the role of the framework is really to support the kind of the sharing and reuse of the various artifacts that we all call ontologies, no matter what they look like, and to be able to at least to be able to compare the work that we do and understand the differences between the different artifacts that we produce. And hopefully by understanding the differences, to be able to have more interoperability between the different kinds of approaches. And again, this is interoperability in terms of more the, you know, not necessarily the difference in domains, but interoperability, particularly when there are shared domains, when there are different ontologies of different kinds of common sense ideas, like, say, time or space, different kinds of medical domains, to at least guarantee that we can have interoperability within these kinds of informal domains. Oh, okay. And there's actually interoperability among the projectors. That's good. I think it's the first time I haven't seen anyone's machine kind of crash the projector. Okay, so Peter, is this so Leo? Would those showings available over the VM as well, so people remotely can see this? Okay. No, it's not. Yes, it is. VNC. Okay, so I'm just trying to think where I wanted to start here. I think I've kind of covered a lot of these ideas. I mean, we began the meeting, or actually began even the document, the initial Strawman framework document, with the idea of, you know, of trying to identify again what we have in common among all the different approaches, and then to be able to articulate the differences. And to a great extent, one of the things that was common was that there is this notion of we're after semantics in some way. We're after the meanings of stuff, whether that stuff is concepts, terms, what have you. But we're after the meaning of this stuff. And that's kind of what we have in common. We're all identifying some of the fundamental kinds of stuff in our different domains. We're identifying ways in which these kinds of stuff are related to each other, and also ways to constrain the ways that these relationships can be used. And in the way the ways that we all of our approaches differ is in the way that we provide this kind of specification of meaning, the specification of the semantics. And so what we tried to identify was a set of what we were calling dimensions, just as a metaphor for the space of ontologies, or the topography of ontologies. And the idea was to be able to use these dimensions as the mechanism for comparing the different approaches. So along a particular dimension, you would be able to compare different kinds of ontologies. We identify two kinds of dimensions, semantic and pragmatic dimensions. Semantic dimensions that we're focusing more on different characteristics of ontologies that constrained how the meanings of these terms, the stuff that we were considering, how to specify that meaning, and the more pragmatic dimensions that cover the context in which the ontology was used and designed. So just before going on there, one note, and one of the things that was a point of a lot of discussion, and which still isn't quite fully resolved, is along each dimension. So implicitly, everybody's not here, as someone noted yesterday, when you're talking about dimension, you're implicitly talking about some kind of metric, I guess. Even metaphorically, there's a metric involved. And so there's this notion of scale. So if you're comparing two different ontologies along a particular dimension, what does that comparison mean, right? Is this a number, a particular kind of score, 0 to 5, 0 to 10, that you're assigning to these ontologies? Or is it more of a kind of a relative kind of ranking in the terms of, well, there are certain benchmark kind of ontologies we might kind of use and to say, well, this particular ontology is further along on one particular dimension than this other one. Because in many cases, comparing two different ontologies, they might not be what is called a linear ordering. Not every pair of ontologies may actually be comparable along a particular dimension. There may be ontologies that just aren't comparable. And so this is one thing that we're still trying to articulate in each case, is a kind of a complete agreement and understanding on what are the values of a particular ontology along a given dimension. And in some cases, this wasn't really, I guess what some of the ISO 11179 people would call, it wasn't a non-enumerated domain, that there were simply a kind of a range of uses, for example, in the intended use. And so there wasn't really a question of further along the dimension one way, one direction or another, but simply an identification of the different range of intended uses of a particular ontology. So, as Frank had eloquently put before, I'll just kind of go over some of the other dimensions, some in a little from a slightly different perspective, I suppose. The one particular dimension that was in the initial document was some notion of a degree of formality or structure. What was getting at here was kind of the nature of, or I guess how elaborate the semantics of the ontology were specified. And by elaborate, I mean this is something that, and again, and there's another kind of discussion too in terms of using the metaphor of dimension, is, well, dimensions are supposed to be independent of each other, orthogonal to each other. And this is really was intended to be reflected in this notion, this dimension of structure. So the idea being, again, that if structure is a property of the ontology that records how elaborate the semantics are encoded, you can have a very elaborate specification of the semantics, even if it is not in a formal language. That if it is very well-structured, well-written natural language descriptions of those terms, then that is a very elaborate ontology. And so this dimension really is independent of the degree of formality. I just want to kind of make that bit clear there. Again, so you can have an ontology that is rich, unambiguous, and precise in any particular ontology representation or any particular language is being used. Second dimension was focusing a little more on the ontology representation language in terms of expressiveness. Now, when it comes to formal languages, there are the logicians and mathematicians have a history of having very precise definitions of expressiveness. And so one of the challenges will be to ensure that this particular dimension does cover all the range of ontologies, not just the formal ontologies. So we'll need a notion of expressiveness and a way of comparing ontologies by expressiveness for every ontology. And this is another example I was saying before, that not all ontologies would necessarily be comparable, or not ontology languages would be necessarily comparable with respect to expressiveness. There are many kinds of languages that just simply aren't comparable, are neither one's not expressive than the more expressive than the other. So in this case, at least we would just simply point to kind of existing prior work from other communities. The third dimension was the representational granularity, which, again, informally or colloquially is looking at the level of detail at which the ontology specified. And, I mean, there are some kinds of quantifiable metrics that people have proposed in the past, the notion of depth of the concept hierarchy, average density of axioms or expressions used to specify the meaning, ideas like this. I guess this could be a future ontology metrology summit for the ontolog community, particularly given our NIST sponsors. But again, there's still a lot of work that we can do there. So along the pragmatic dimensions, and this was also reflected very strongly in the communique, is the identifying the intended use or application focus of an ontology is one of the most valuable ways of recognizing the commonalities and distinctions between different ontologies. And so, again, this is kind of one of the, in this case, the dimensions are not going to be more intended or less intended or more applied. Less applied is more kind of just simply identifying what are these different kinds of applications. And we don't want to prescribe what these various applications are. I guess this could almost be a folksonomy of intended uses as we kind of identify these. And part of the idea is that we want to have this to be a very dynamic community. And I think, as we'll hear in the population summary, there'll be mechanisms for people to connect their ontologies to these various categories. The second pragmatic dimension is sort of related to applications, and thus related to automated reasoning. It's been recognized that a lot of the impetus behind ontologies, particularly in the past 5 or so years, has really been pushed by a lot of work on semantic web and other kinds of automated or semi-automated software integration, semantic integration. And automated reasoning plays a big role in this. And so one of the pragmatic dimensions is simply identifying what kinds, if any, kinds of inference or automated reasoning can the ontology support. And this takes a wide range of ideas, including different kinds of special interpreters or inference engines that can use the content of an ontology. And this can range from very simple forms of automated reasoning to very complex kinds of theorem proving. But just because it's called simple, there are many kinds of inference, and no matter how simple it is, if it's extracting something that wasn't existing on a particular web page, for example, that kind of inference can be incredibly powerful in refining search, for example. The third pragmatic dimension was the notion of prescriptive versus descriptive. And I think we probably did a very good job of mangling some of the original intent of this dimension. And I hope we've, as reflected in the communique, I hope it's capturing the original intent of the proposal. So the idea is whether the ontology is capturing a particular body of practice as it is, or whether it is something that's being designed as a way of prescribing how things should be done in a particular kind of domain. This can make have big implications in terms of the methodology and kinds of applications. So the penultimate dimension on the pragmatic side is the design methodology. And again, initially, the framework had simply two values here, top down, bottom up. But we recognize that is really a gross oversimplification. That in many ways there's a kind of a bottom, even bottom up or empirical or emergent kinds of methodologies in which ontologies are built as a community, and which is effectively what this framework is. Or the other kind of the way of a top-down design, where there is a set of requirements analogous to software engineering, and the ontology is designed in that way. Or also incorporating some of the work that went into upper ontologies, in which case there's a lot of merging and mediation. And that's a methodology in and of itself. And finally, one pragmatic dimension that arose directly out of the discussions that was not included in the original framework proposal was the notion of governance. So this is examining how decisions concerning the structure and content of an ontology are made. This can range to ontologies that have legal, regulatory implications, but also incorporates some other kind of metadata that talks about provenance of definitions in ontology. And I think beyond identifying and recognizing this dimension, I don't think we ever came to any firm ideas on how to evaluate governance or how to identify different kinds of governance. Again, something that we'll be really looking for in the future. Just in conclusion then, we wanted to avoid positing a definition that would kind of serve to distract us into wordsmithing and terminology debates. We really wanted to allow different characteristics of ontology and perhaps even a definition of ontology to emerge. And I think the communique really does reflect this kind of common understanding of different ways of comparing ontologies. So we really, again, we wanted to use this as a way of comparing ontologies to understand how ontologies are alike. And even when they're different, at least understand how they're comparable. Thank you.
This is Steve Ray. Thank you, Michael. You can turn off your mic if you like. after a small, actually, if you don't mind, do you have access to the wiki? If you're plugged in, if you wouldn't mind being pressed into service here, we are, and for those of you on the telephone,
we're
just about to upload the next set of slides.
How many people can stay to the end? Is most who can't stay to the end? How many people are going to have to cut out early? Okay, how? If we move the whole thing forward like by 30 minutes, 45 minutes, would that help out? Because it's pretty hot right now. We can take a 5-minute break, come back, skip my section. I'll just throw it into my final talk. Yeah, that's okay. For the record, they can be up there. But I mean, I just pulled 3 slides out of my keynote anyway. So we can just skip that and zoom ahead with the other presentations, and then we can get, after break, get on with the day. How's that sound? Objections to that?
Peter, you had something, comment?
I was just going to say, I haven't actually presented, I haven't prepared anything because I don't feel comfortable about presenting any sort of European perspective. I just get shot down whatever I say. So that you'll, with me wittering on, you'll save half an hour.
The same is true for me. I'm not planning to prepare or present anything on taxonomies this afternoon for the same reason.
All right. Well, we do have Deborah McGinnis, I know, and Chris Menzel, I believe, if you're on the line, you could confirm, have prepared some remarks. So why don't we do this? And why don't we take a brief break, just let people stretch their legs, come back and 10 minutes, it'll give us a chance to get reorganized here a little bit, and then we will start having some of the perspectives on this thing, including, so we will have Deborah McGinnis, Chris Menzel, and then Tom Gruber. Peter's not, well, doesn't have slides, so he wasn't going to really present, I think, right? Deborah McGinnis, Chris Menzel, and Tom Gruber, I believe. All right, we will reconvene in 10 minutes. That's 2:10 East Coast time. Thank you.